From Newbury's Corn Exchange to Crookham Common, this is Kennet Radio.
We're going to talk now about St Nicholas Church in Newbury. It's a big church in the centre of town, and it's got some wonderful stained glass windows. So we're going to talk about the church and the stained glass windows. And I'm joined by Rick Coward, who is a church warden there and also an expert in the stained glass windows. Good afternoon, Rick.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed for being here. First of all, just tell us about St Nicholas Church. Where is it and what is it?
Okay, so it's always worrying to be introduced as an expert because people might have high expectations, but let's go. So St Nick's Church is on Bartholomew Street. Unfortunately, it kind of turns its back. It's a massive church with a big tower, but it kind of turns its back to the street. So you could actually walk past it and not notice it.
But it's huge. And just tell us briefly about the history, because it goes back a long way, doesn't it?
Right, it goes back to... Well, it goes back to Norman times, the actual church, but it was rebuilt starting in 1490. So just before the Reformation, because if you know your history stuff, Martin Luther starts the Reformation in 1517. So it kind of spans that period, and it's by, well, I think it's about 1532 the church is built. So it took about 40 years to build.
But presumably looked a bit different from today, because there's been some buildings since then, haven't there?
Yeah, so it would have been, I mean, you're talking about it being built in the Catholic period. So churches were very ornate. Certainly it's in a style which is called Perpendicular Gothic. And the windows would have been filled with stained glass, although we're not absolutely sure, but it's very probable that they would have been filled with stained glass. The place would have looked... had statues in it, may well have had paintings on the wall. It would have looked very different to what it looks today.
So what happened to make it look different as we know it today?
Okay, so the Reformation comes along, and there was a bit of trouble under Henry VIII, but even more so under Edward VI, and probably at that time any stained glass and any statues would have been torn out of the church, because it was kind of very austere, iconoclastic. They wanted to get rid of all anything that kind of smelt of Rome, so to speak.
Edward VI was a son of Henry VIII,
yeah.
But he only lasted until he was quite young.
I think he ascended to the throne when he was about 14. He didn't last very long. Mm. But don't test me on my history.
No, I won't.
I said the expert thing is always a worrying...
A double-edged sword,
yes.
So what happened in the 19th century? Because something happened.
Okay, so the church becomes very austere. In the 18th century, preaching becomes really important, and everything else is stripped away. So, in fact, the pulpit would have been in the middle of the church. It would have had box pews all around it. They only took communion on the Eucharist three times a year, and so the bit up the far end, the chancel, would have hardly ever been used, and kind of probably used as a storage area more than anything else, amazingly. Mm. So things changed in the 19th century.
Box pews, what are they?
Box pews. So these are big pews with big sides on them, and you bought your box pew. You bought it for the year, and it had a door on it, and I think people even locked the doors on their pews.
So you could virtually go to sleep inside there.
You could go to sleep inside there. And in some churches, I believe that people even had fireplaces inside their box pews. So you could be very comfortable if you had the money.
So it was very different from today.
Yeah.
And then the Victorians came along and changed it.
Yeah. Well, things happened in the Victorian church. It kind of started to slide downhill. The modernity came along, things like the trains, industry, the Industrial Revolution, and life changed, became much more urbanized, and the church kind of began to lose traction a bit. So there was a big movement called the Oxford Movement, and this was kind of looking back and trying to restore churches and restore worship to what some perceived idea of the past. And that past was the English church before the Reformation. So they were kind of reaching back, and they wanted to kind of re-Gothic everything, including the singing, what the church looked like. It was quite a huge movement.
So a major construction exercise that made it look more like we're used to today. day with new arches and things like that.
Yeah, so that started there's a movement called the Cambridge Camden Movement. It gets a bit technical. But that was kind of the architectural side of the Oxford movement. Hmm. And that was looked to restore churches back to their sort of Gothic beauty. And it was kind of trying to access that worship that took place before the Reformation. Hmm. So if you were going to worship in that way, you needed a church that looked right and was a holy place that you could worship in. So a lot of things came back in. And St Nick's Church, we had Derbyshire alabaster put all around the front of the church.
What on earth is that? Is that like marble?
It's like marble, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a red marble. So if you go into the church, you'll see all around the chancel is like a red marble.
And the chancel, tell us what that is.
That's the bit at the far end, at the east end.
Where
of the
altar is.
So as you come in at the back and you look down, you see the chancel at the far end. And the bit you look down is called the nave.
Tell us about what happened to bring about the current day stained glass windows.
Okay, so they handed over the church to an architect called Henry Woodyer, who was a bit of a sort of gentleman architect who spent his summers travelling around the Mediterranean, getting plans sent to him and sending them back. And he
was like a sort of billionaire
he was like a billionaire floating around the Mediterranean. And anyway, he worked very closely with a company called Hardman and Co. And their designer was a guy called John Hardman Powell, who designed stained glass windows. He'd been an apprentice of Pugin, the Victorian, very famous Victorian Gothic Revival architect. So the two of them worked on, I think, about 67 projects together. So it was a bit of a wrap-up, the two. And they brought a plan together for putting stained glass in all 31 of the windows. That's a huge project, because if you've been in St Nick's Church, you'll realise these are big windows, and they wanted to fill all 31 of those with stained glass. And they set about this project as part of a reordering of the church. So the old pews were ripped out, and they put new pews in, and they did the ceiling, and they dropped the floor by about 18 inches so that you'd have a feeling of walking along the church and up to the high altar at the end. So a lot of work was done. And as part of this, around 1866, 1867, they started putting the stained glass in.
And the stained glass was actually produced in Birmingham, I understand.
That's right,
so
yeah.
Travel down.
Yeah.
And while they were doing all this reordering, they went into the Mansion House, I believe?
That's right, yeah. The congregation moved out for about seven or eight years.
That's incredible, yeah. Isn't it? But a long time.
But the funny thing is they kind of ran out of money. So there's a few things, there's a few things skimped on towards the end. So the pews aren't very good, and the corbels that were meant to be, which keep up the roof, were meant to be carved, but they're not. So they're big blocks of ugly
blocks. So corbels being sort of stone.
That's the stone that sticks out that props up the roof.
Yeah.
So they were meant to be carved, but they ran out of money. So they also ran out of money for doing all the rest of the stained glass. So by the early 1870s, they'd got about just under half of the windows in. So they had to find a way of putting the rest of them in. What they thought would be a good idea was to form the Newbury Stained Glass Window Society, and then get everyone in the congregation and beyond to subscribe 5 shillings a year. And they were looking for sort of 400 or 500 people. They only have got about 300. But they were looking for around 500 people, which would contribute enough money a year to put one new window in every year. So they thought they'd have it done in about 15 years.
And what happened in the end? How long did it take them?
It took till 1910 to complete it. So with having fewer people than they'd expected in this contributing the subscriptions, it took quite a bit more time. But there's quite a few interesting sort of stopping off points on the way that they managed to get some more money in. So Queen Victoria has her Golden Jubilee, so they pulled in, I think that's 1888, I think. So that pulls in a bit of money for that. They did a window where they wanted to celebrate Jack of Newbury, which will probably be familiar to quite a few, a guy who's familiar to quite a few listeners, and they managed to pull in some money from his family. They tracked them down, his relatives.
All this speaks to just enormous dedication and effort for years, decades,
huge.
Do these stained glass windows.
Huge, yes. You've got big windows of down the south side of the church. You've got windows of parables of Jesus. Down the north side, you've got miracles. In the top, in the clear story, you've got Old Testament saints down one side, you've got New Testament saints down the other side. Huge amount of effort to produce that. And what's wonderful about them is they're made by one firm. So although in the minutes of the Newbury Stained Glass Windows Society, as always happens on committees, someone after a while said, hey, they're taking advantage of us because we keep on going back to Hardman & Co. And so they put it out to tender, and in the end, they Hardman & Co. were in the middle. So the vicar pulled rank at the end, a guy called Leslie Randall, he pulls rank, and he says, well, I don't want Jesus to look different in all the windows that are coming to the ones that we've had before. So we'll stick with Hardman & Co. So he saved the day and meant we got a set of 31 windows from one source.
If you were to pick one highlight from all those windows, what would you go for?
Oh, that's putting me on the spot. It's not spectacular, but the east side of the north aisle, right in the far corner when you go into the church, there's a window that celebrates Samuel Wilberforce, who was William Wilberforce's son. He became the Bishop of Oxford, and that for me is kind of maximum interest, because he is a guy that's behind the whole movement of what was happening in the Church of England at the time, and this window celebrates him.
The Oxford movement,
right. Yeah. Although I'll be technical now, he wasn't strictly a member of the Oxford movement, but he was hugely responsible for a lot of the ceremony and the dressing up that returned to the Church of England in the late 1800s. So it's quite nice that he's celebrating that window, because it kind of puts all the rest of it into context.
Right. And he was the son of William Wilberforce, was a campaigner against slavery.
Yeah. Kind of very, very different churchmanship. He was brought up an evangelical, and then he kind of goes towards the high church movement. So he's quite an interesting character.
Right. Now, how can people see the windows and find out more about them and St. Nicholas Church?
Well, St. Nicholas Church is open most days, usually sort of from sort of 9-ish in the morning till late afternoon, and you can always stroll in. If you catch me there, and I'm there a reasonable amount of time because of being a warden in the church, I will always walk you around the windows. I have bored a few people senseless doing so, but
yes, you probably have to stop you at
you
some
have to
point
stop me,
for
yeah.
a natural break.
Yes.
And there's a lovely handbook as well in several languages.
There is. It's not a huge amount of information, but if you're walking around the church, there's plenty to read there. It just gives you a little bit on the history of the church, and as you said, we got it in quite a few languages, I think, including Cantonese.
And German.
German.
French.
French. I've seen, definitely. I'm not sure, Dutch.
Dutch, I think so.
I think so.
Yes. So that's great. Thanks ever so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
And you did a thesis in the whole thing, isn't
it? Well,
I've
done a dissertation, yeah.
Dissertation.
A master's dissertation, yeah.
That's
so
brilliant.
So it was a lot of fun, and a great, because all the in the Berkshire Record Office there's a huge archive, including quite a few of the original watercolours that were done for the designs that were signed off as the design. So it's fascinating, and they said I'm one of the first people who've gone back and looked at those properly, and they said they can't ever remember getting the watercolours out in the past. So the records office said they didn't weren't absolutely sure they had them until they came out.
So it's very historic, isn't it?
Yeah. Right.
So would you like to dedicate the next song to anyone?
Well, I can only think of one person to dedicate to. It's my long-suffering wife who had to put up with me talking about this for 10 months and disappearing away and writing about it and then complaining that I hadn't written the right thing and starting again.
So I think that's good call.
Sharon, my wife.
A good call, Rick. Thanks. Thanks ever so much for talking with us, and
pleasure.
All the best to everybody at St Nick's.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
To everything.